You're listening to the 140th Wing Podcast. I'm Technical Sergeant Chance Johnson with 140th Wing Public Affairs. And today I'm speaking with Colonel Benjamin Scrappy Couchman, the new 140th Wing Commander. Good morning, sir, and Happy New Year.
Good morning. Happy New Year. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So this is our first full week back into the office following the holidays. So yep. New year, new commander.
Yeah.
Even,
for sure.
Even still, the roads were a little bit rough with snow today, so it's still a little bit quiet around here so
I
far.
I agree,
so.
Yeah. I'm supposed to fly tonight, but I don't know. Yeah. It's not looking too promising.
How were your holidays? Did you do anything special?
We had my wife's family came in town for a week, which was nice. Good to see all of them. And then the week after that, we went up to Crested Butte. I just love that mountain. We try and make that trip every year, just the vibe, way chill. So we got some snowboarding and skiing in. My little guy, 6-year-old, he got to do some ski lessons and everything, got to hang out with his friends. So it was good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is that on the Epic, the Crested
Butte? It is.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
It's so far out there. I just never make it out there.
Yeah, it's about a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
So you need to stay.
Yeah,
you know?
If you're going to go, it's going to be a trip.
I tell you, though, it's worth it. It's really chill.
Okay.
It's a chill town because it is off the beaten path.
Yeah,
you know?
It's probably, yeah, I need to get that on my calendar then.
You should.
Kind of one of the big reasons that we want to do this is, you know, obviously we want to introduce you as a new commander, not only for our people to get to know you and your background and kind of what your vision is for the 140th for the future, but also we serve the community and especially as guardsmen. We're embedded in the community. You know, this is where a lot of us grew up. We go to, we have full-time jobs outside of here within the community. We, you know, go to school, church, what have you, you know, we're all over the place. So
for sure,
we serve Aurora, we serve Colorado, we serve the nation. And so it's important also just the people locally around us kind of understand, you know, where you're coming from and what we're all about. So
you bet.
You brought up your family. So you're married, you have kids. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah. So, married, to Suzanne. We've been married, it'll be 20 years, next year.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I'll be gone, unfortunately, during our anniversary. So that's having quite a bit with her, with my past in the military. But it is what it is. And then we have, 1 6-year-old William. He's our son. He's awesome. He's a trooper.
All right.
Yep. So that's my family. Yeah. Cool. We have a dog, cat, you know, as well. And round it out.
You guys live in the area here?
Or? We live in West Highland.
So okay.
Just west of downtown.
Okay.
Nice little, it's a great neighborhood.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. So tell us a little bit about your background in the military.
Okay. So you bet. So no military background in my family. A buddy of mine convinced me to go to the Air Force Academy. So I can blame him for everything. So I went to the Air Force Academy, graduated in 2002, and then from there went into pilot training. So went to pilot training, flew the T-37, T-38 out of Shepherd Air Force Base, and then did my IFF there, which is Introduction to Fighter Fundamentals, and then rolled over to Luke in Phoenix and got spun up in the F-16. First assignment was a hardship tour to Aviano, Italy. So my wife and I, instead of taking a dedicated honeymoon, we just traveled for 3 years around Europe. It was awesome.
That's
it was
awesome.
Outstanding. Yep. Deployed out of there to Korea. So semi deployment there. And then actually when I was back in R&R, in Greece, my commander called me and he asked me if I enjoyed Korea. And I said, sure. He said, well, you're going back. So I PCS'd to Korea, went to Kunsan, air base for about a year and a half. And then, you know, flew, did all the stuff in Korea, making sure that I stabilized the peninsula and all that good stuff. It was a good tour. And then after that, I looked to do something different. So I tried out with Air Force Special Operations Command, and then I went to be a JTAC and then an air liaison. So a Joint Terminal Attack Controller and an air liaison officer with the Ranger Regiment. So flew out to Hurlburt, tried out for that, got picked up for that. And then I did that for 3 years. So got to see the other side of, you know, the aviation industry there. I was on the ground talking to the aircraft. Deployed to Afghanistan 3 times while I was with the Rangers before getting picked back up and jumped back into the cockpit. So I did a transition course, started flying again, went back to Aviano, deployed again to Afghanistan, And then in 2016, I was hired by Colorado, and I transitioned from the active duty to Colorado. So that's kind of my career in a nutshell there.
All right. So what made you choose to leave active duty and join the Guard?
Yeah, you bet. So personally, overall, I really liked the way my career went, where I had active duty first and then transitioned to the Guard. For me and my family, I think it was a good combination. I really dug active duty. I liked what we did. I liked the mission. I liked moving around and everything that all the opportunities it gave us. And then I really was looking to stabilize, you know, so 14 years active duty, which was outstanding. But we got to the point where, okay, now we want to slow down on the moves. We want to stabilize somewhere. We want to become more part of a community. And so we started looking at different Guard units. Didn't know a lot about it, but actually when I was a JTAC, I spun up the 120th Fighter Squadron. They were going to Djibouti in 2012. And I was one of the guys on the ground that spun them up before their deployment. So I got to know all the guys. Mm-hmm. So we got to talk about Colorado. We got to talk about the Guard. I started to learn more about it and decided, yeah, we're going to do it. Put my application in and decided to roll to the Guard. So it was really that transition in life where I wanted to be more stable. I wanted to be a part of a community a bit more. And it just worked out great, the timing and how it worked out with my career after the active duty.
Cool. So you mentioned working with the 120th, but besides that, did you ever have any other motivations to come to Colorado?
Yeah, so good question. Air Force Academy from 1998 to 2002. So I lived in Colorado for 4 years, love Colorado. When people asked me like where I wanted to transition to the Guard, it was Colorado. And then it was kind of just dot, dot, dot after that. And I couldn't really pick up the second. So by far, I mean, Colorado was my number one and pretty much only choice that I wanted to transition, in the F-16 back here versus going somewhere else. Those ties I had at the academy. And then my wife also, she used to take trips with her family way back in the day to ski. Actually, at the time, she skied at the time when she was a kid. So we just love Colorado. And now we got a little guy who was born in Colorado, so he's got ties, mm-hmm. you know, forever. He already loves the Broncos, you know, so it's good.
Good.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that a friend of yours, going back again to before your career, a friend of yours talked you into joining the academy.
Yeah.
You must have had aspirations leading up to that to be a pilot.
So it's funny. I'm one of those guys that didn't. As I grew up, in high school, you know, worked hard, sports, all that good stuff, but neither one of us really knew what we wanted to do after high school. It's just, we knew we wanted to do something. We wanted to do something that would mean something. But we didn't know that what that was. And, there was actually a college fair at our high school. My buddy's like, let's go talk to the Air Force Academy. And I'm like, all right. I mean, my family has zero ties to the military, zero. And so I was like, okay, yeah, we'll go talk. So we went out on an orientation and we both applied, we both got in and we both decided to go. And actually throughout the academy, I was more focused on special operations. So I was doing a couple different courses while I was at the academy, kind of focused towards there. I was looking at transitioning to the Navy, going to BUDS for SEALs. And that's why the ALO gig, the JTAC gig with the Ranger Regiment later on in my career, like kind of drew me, is because I had always been drawn to that special operations mindset. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I did that. And then I also had the opportunity to fly. I knew I could fly, I'm still flying, obviously, so into the far reaches of my career. And I decided to do that. So it was more, what could I do with my life? What difference could I make than really the actual flying? The flying was a way to do that.
If there's somebody out there listening who has aspirations to be a pilot, what would you tell them as far as pursuing a career in this?
Yeah, I would say, it's all about what drives you, what gives you meaning. And so if someone wants to be a pilot in the Air Force, there's nothing there that's going to stop them, right? Except for themselves. So do it. Take that leap, you know, whether it's ROTC, whether it's the academy, whatever, whether it's rolling enlisted and then applying, you know, into the Guard so you can go direct to the Guard. There's so many pathways to get to be a pilot if that is truly what someone wants to do. And I would challenge anyone to tell that person not to do it. I think if that's what drives them and that and that's what they want to do in this world, then do it. You're your own worst enemy, right? So you can talk yourself out of stuff all the time. But at the end of the day, it's you. It's your decision. It's your life. So do it.
What kind of aptitudes would you say you personally had that helped you test into that?
So I think, to be honest, from a pilot perspective, going to the academy is kind of the easy route because there's so many slots that come out of the Air Force Academy for pilots. So I think as long as you have a heartbeat and you have good eyes and you didn't fail, then you're probably going to get that pilot slot, you know. I think, obviously you got to put up with 4 years of the academy, so it depends if you want to do that or not. Coming off the street, especially getting hired by a guard unit, that's super hard. That's way harder than I had it because there's so many applicants for that one one spot. You know, ROTC is probably in the middle there, right? But I would say the aptitudes that you need to pass the tests, right? The AFOQT and the other tests that are required. That's kind of the baseline. And then ultimately, especially if you want to go to a guard unit, you got to be a good person, right? We're gonna look at that person and be like, hey, is this someone that we want to be able to be working with us that I can trust, that I can fight for the next 20 years? If you're that person, you're gonna get hired, you know. So I would say it's that combination, you know, that human aspect and also that intellectual, obviously that ability aspect. You need both of those to work together if you want to be a successful pilot.
Aside from like academic aptitudes, would you say what are some other qualities? Like you probably say leadership.
Yep. Yeah, I see. Yeah, I see what you're asking. Yeah, sure.
Determination, just kind of right. Stick-to-itiveness.
Right. Like, the pilot training is hard. It's day after day of working, right? You work 12, 13, 14 hours a day. You're studying beforehand. You're making sure that you don't make mistakes because you can't make mistakes when you're up in these fighters. You have to be good enough to do it. So that determination, like you mentioned, it's critical. It's critical you have that determination. It's critical that you have that dedication, right? That you're willing to put in the time. You're willing to forego other things to make sure that you're set up for success. And then ultimately, you do have to be a leader. You know, as you roll into whatever your aircraft is, in my case, F-16, initially you're going to be a wingman. So you're going to be on someone's wing. But within a year, I was a flight lead. So already, you know, I'm leading, whether it's a two ship, a four ship or whatever. And then from there you transition into the jobs that you're going to hold within the squadron. So, all those things are critical qualities that you need to have to make sure that you're successful. Absolutely.
Right. Was there ever a time, I'm sure there was throughout your career, whether it been pilot training or any time moving forward where you really felt like, there, you know, you hit a brick wall or you just like, I can't do this. This is going to be as far as I can go. I'm stuck. And what was that and what helped you overcome that?
You know, I'm going to answer that with a little twist on it, I think. So when I was at Kunsan, basically I got my follow-on assignment before I tried out with AFSOC and my career was set. For the next, let's see, what was it? The next 14 years. It was like, hey, here's your career. This is what you're going to do next. And then this, and then that, and then this. And it was kind of like, this is the formula for you to get to 06 or 07 or whatever. And to be honest, it sounded terrible because I enjoyed seeing the new things every time. And for to have that roadmap for me, it didn't like it. And that was one of the driving factors when I went and tried out for AFSOC from a career move, from a fighter pilot career move. It was a bad decision, right? It took me out of the cockpit, but for me, it's what I wanted to do. It's how I wanted to contribute. And so that brick wall, as you termed it, was that roadmap. And I decided to take that road that was less traveled, tried out for AFSOC, did the ALO gig for 3 years, jumped back in the cockpit, and then went to the guard. You know, it wasn't that formula that was presented to me. And it was, hey, what's that next assignment? What's that next thing that I'm passionate about? And for me, it was becoming an ALO. And then after that, it was going back into the F-16. And then the next step was going to the guard. you know, that's what I wanted to do with my career, and that's how I overcame it.
Good. So I think that that also speaks to most of the time, you know, the path that we want isn't ideally what, you know, if we envision, like you said, getting to 06, 07, you might have had an idealized pathway to get there, which the most comfortable way to get there, the most interesting way to get there. But, you know, you have to kind of sometimes detour from that, and it may not be comfortable, but you'd probably agree that getting out of our comfort zone is probably the best way we learn. And in retrospect, that probably is something that was a great learning experience from you.
Absolutely. You. I appreciate the fact that you use comfort. The way I describe my ALO and JTAC gig with the Rangers was it was the most uncomfortable time of my life. And for 3 years straight, I was out of my comfort zone. I was doing things that I was not, you know, ready for if I did not have my NCOIC. So my senior enlisted, if I did not have him, I would have been lost. He made sure that I stayed on the straight and narrow. He corrected me when I was doing something wrong. But getting outside of that comfort zone, as you just said, I mean, that's how I lived for 3 years. And I learned more in those 3 years than I probably did in any other time.
Sure. Yep. And you probably appreciate more once you get back, you know, on the path
absolutely.
That you want to be in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
Yep. Absolutely.
Getting back to you, you know, taking the reins recently as the new wing commander for the 140th. Speaking in regards to people, innovation, and readiness, TAG's priorities are Adjutant General's priorities.
You bet.
Under your leadership, what do you kind of see as some major goals or milestones during your time in the seat?
Yeah, good question. So our wings, the way the Air Force is going to fight wars now is being, you know, turned over on its head, right? We are completely going to restructure wings so that the wing is the, as they call it, quote unquote, unit of action versus the squadron. So the wing is going to deploy versus squadrons deploying. And in that form, they're going to deploy as deployed combat wings. It basically follows the model of the Navy with the carrier strike groups, or the Army as the brigade combat teams. And the intent is that when a combatant commander, you know, in whatever AOR is accepting forces, if the Air Force presents a DCW, a deployed combat wing, to him or her, they know exactly what they're getting, because that is the standard unit of action that is being presented by the Air Force. And right now, this is what is happening. And so in this 10-year, in the next 2 years, I want to restructure our wing into a DCW. We are going to be a pilot unit, a Pathfinder unit, I believe is the word of choice, but a Pathfinder unit for a pre-block, so Block 30, to turn into a DCW within the Air National Guard. So that's my focus. How are we going to get there? We're probably going to get kind of a loose look at it, a loose organizational chart in February. Then we're going to use the XAB, so the Expeditionary Airbase deployment that we have upcoming here for 6 months. We're going to use that to basically, it's kind of, I don't know if baby step is the right word, but it's a step towards the DCW. So we're going to use that time to kind of learn what does and does not work. And then we're going to come back and we're going to look at restructuring the wing so that nominally, again, this could move left or right, but nominally around the summer of 26, this wing will look very different. It will be in the form of a DCW that we can present to the combatant commander. So when you talk about modernization, innovation, readiness, and all that, all those three things combine into how we present that force. All the while, we're looking to make sure that we continue with our space mission and their transition in missions right now. They are holding down two different missions while supporting active duty. Active duty cannot do it without our space brothers and sisters. And then we're also looking at what are we going to do with our jets. So we have old jets. We need fighter recap. So we're looking at what does that mean? Does that mean F-35s? Does that mean post-block F-16s? Does that mean F-15EXs? I don't know. But all those things combined are going to be happening over the next 2 years. So I think this is going to be an eventful couple years for this wing.
Right.
Those are my focuses.
And so you mentioned participating in the upcoming XAB deployment this year. So what's leadership going to look like here while you're away?
Okay, good question. Yeah, there you go. As I deploy with our XAB team, during that time, we're deploying about 170 to 180 people About 140 of those are going to our XAB, so we're all going together, and then the other 40 will be supplementals to other locations. So quite a big chunk of people that are going to be departing from the wing. At the upper echelons, so I'll be leaving. Colonel Worrell will be filling in as the wing commander while the XAB is out the door. Additionally, Kojak, so Colonel Melka, will move from the ops group up to the deputy. He'll probably still have his hands in the ops group a little bit, but those two will be filling the top floor there. And then within the squadron, so you have a couple of squadron commanders that are going to be deploying, such as Lieutenant Colonel Donovan out of CE, Skufka out of FSS. And then we have multiple people, obviously, all throughout the different squadrons and flights and units that will be deploying. As they deploy out, then, you know, DOs will be stepping up, deputies will be stepping up. So you really do see it'll be a very dynamic wing as everyone is kind of moving and stepping into roles that maybe they hadn't previously filled. So it should be good. It should be good for everyone. It should be good for the wing. DSG's coming on orders, whether that's to deploy, whether that's to backfill back home. It's going to be a dynamic time. But when you're looking at the upper echelons of leadership, it'll be Colonel Worrell and then Colonel Melka kind of driving the fight there.
All right. When we were speaking about innovation, readiness, and people, the F-35, upgrading the F-16 possibly to the F-35.
Yep.
Can you speak to, you know, what the urgency of that looks like, the sunset date for that jet, for the F-16?
Sure. So I'll start off with the sunset date is it's a moving target. And that's one thing that we've tried to communicate to the community and to our CODELs who are doing outstanding work in support of us. But as the Air Force looks at that airframe, they look at, hey, when are we gonna fail structurally? When is the avionics gonna run out? The supply line, when's that gonna be cut off? There's so many variables and factors. And what they're doing is they're patching where they can. So that's why that sunset kind of shifts. But nominally, you know, we're looking mid FY30s in there, like whether that's, you know, a couple years earlier than that, a couple years later than that, that's kind of what we're looking at as a sunset, no kidding, for that F-16. We're already seeing many structural issues with the F-16. The current one is where the wings connect to the fuselage. There's some stress there, and our maintenance team is doing an outstanding job making sure that they are innovating on a daily basis. Whether it's speed brakes, whether it's wing connections, it's crazy what they're doing. They are going above and beyond what even higher echelons are doing to make sure that F-16 keeps flying. So from a sunset perspective, that's what we're looking at. But we need a new fighter kind of tagged. So we want to see out in the future. All right. This is the fighter that we're going to get, because it will take time for those fighters to come off the line, say at Lockheed, and then it'll take time for us to actually transition. So train up our maintainers, train up our pilots, so that we can take over the mission. So in the next couple of years, we really need to kind of get an idea of, hey, are we going to go that post-block F-16 route, which is basically, you know, a newer F-16s? Are we going to go that F-35 route? Are we going to go a different route? We really need to kind of nail that down so that we're set prior to that sunset happening with our pre-blocks.
I want to go back real quick to leadership. Well, a lot of times when I have folks in here in leadership roles, such as yourself, I like to ask people, what is your leadership style?
Okay. So my leadership style is, I think you can probably wrap it up in, there's a YouTube video, Carrier Strike Group Commander, that put together. It's like 10 minutes long and it's great. I want to empower my people, my commanders, to make decisions on their own. The way he phrased it, I think, is really what I like. It's just that if I'm the one, me personally, if I'm the one making a decision, then as soon as I am not there to make a decision, the organization stagnates. And everyone's automatically going to be looking at me to make a decision. And so to breed a culture where people can make their own decisions, I'm obviously going to be getting the information like I want the information, but I'm going to step back, allow people to make those decisions, empower people all the way down to our lowest ranking enlisted to make sure that they know that they have the support to make those decisions. And it's a trust, right? And the trust goes both ways. It's me trusting them that they are going to make the correct decision, but it's obviously also that they're trusting me that I won't like roll down on them, right? If a wrong decision is made, I have to be ready to accept the fact that maybe someone's going to make a decision that I wouldn't have made. If I'm going to put that much trust in them, if I'm going to put that responsibility on that on their shoulders, then I have to know that that people are going to do things differently than me. And that's okay. You know what? Because there's a lot of smarter people than me in this wing. And so I got to make sure that they have that leeway to make those mistakes, to stretch the bounds, to innovate, right? To modernize. And so I think, you know, if you're asking me my leadership style, the most critical part of it would be that.
Great. Can you tell us where call sign Scrappy came from?
Oh, yes. Normally that's over a beer, but so let's see. I'll loosely tell you it was kind of over a multitude of events. So as you roll to your first CAF unit, your Combat Air Force unit, once you become a wingman, so a mission ready, combat mission ready wingman, then you get named. And so leading up to that, I would say, what's the term I want to use? Maybe a little bit feisty, especially if we're possibly in a bar enjoying a beverage post-flight. And then it kind of culminated in Zaragoza, Spain. We were on a TDY when I was at Aviano. And there were a couple larger Russians that showed up in the bar. And we had been talking with some of their friends. Well, they, for whatever reason, we didn't see eye to eye, and we got in a little bit of an argument. And from what I've been told is the two of them towered over me as we got into said argument, and then that kind of clinched the deal with Scrappy.
All right.
So yeah,
I like it.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. I left out a couple details there, you know, just for
that'll be for over the beer.
That's right. Right. That's right.
So actually, one more question from this is a personal one that I'm always curious about. So. Obviously, you can't listen to music when you're flying. But I always think to myself, like when I'm riding my motorcycle or I'm snowboarding, I listen to music that gets me kind of pumped up and charged up, ready to go.
Yeah.
So what do you listen to anything to get ready for flight that kind of gets you charged up?
So normally it's whatever AFE, so the aircrew flight equipment shop has on, they always have something playing. So prior to a flight, right, we get our brief from the supervisor of flying, then we go brief up within the flight, and then we go get dressed, so G suit and all that good stuff, right? And AFE always has something jamming in there, and they have a very eclectic range of music that they play. So that's normally what I listen to prior to flying, but I also listen to music when I'm snowboarding. So most recently I was snowboarding up in Crested Butte, as we talked about. And for me, Blink 182 is one of my favorites. I saw them back in the day, actually, when I was at the Air Force Academy, and then just recently saw them again. So they hold a dear place in my heart. They pump me up. I also like the Linkin Park. I've always liked Linkin Park, but I do like, this may be sacrilegious to say, but I do like the new singer. She's pretty good. And again, I know that people have strong feelings about that. That pumps me up. And then overall, like genre of music, I like punk. So okay. I really revert back to punk. It gets me pumped up.
All right. Well, you're in good company. So
yep. Right. I've Social D. Actually, I saw Social D. A few months ago, we went with some friends, and I ended up in the mosh pit.
Oh no!
Yeah, my wife was like, "Oh my god!"
We were probably so. I was at tech school during that same tour, and I saw him in Maryland, just outside of DC. And I got crowd surfed. So,
there you go.
Was a Bad Religion opening for them?
No, they weren't. Not on that one, but I like Bad Religion too. Okay.
Yeah, this would have been like April, May time frame.
So. Okay. I think it was a little bit before that, but yeah. I like Bad Religion. Yeah,
all right.
This is one of my favorites. Yep.
Cool.
AFI is good. I see.
Yep.
Across. What else? Let's see. Yep.
All right.
I like them. Yeah.
Well, cool. Now learn that much more about you. All right. Well, great, sir. Did you have anything else you want to leave us with?
Just that, you know, I hope everyone had great holidays. It was a good rest and a relaxed time. I appreciate TAG specifically for kind of pushing that to make sure that people were able to have time with their families and really connect. And I know this next year it's going to be busy, and I appreciate everyone's dedication. I know that there is stresses that come with work, with family, et cetera. And when we look at this next year with our deployments, when we look at our inspections, when we look at our big aviation movements, our space movements, I realize that it can be overwhelming. So I wanted to say thank you to everyone. It amazes me every day what all of you do. And so I appreciate that dedication. And it's not lost on me the amount that we do. And so I appreciate what you do for Colorado and the United States. Thank you.
All right. Great, sir. Well, thanks for making the time to come in.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right.